हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 49. The philosophy of materialism searches for a single principle that is the root of all existence. This is a great folly. If one thinks that the material atoms are eternal, the void is eternal, the relation between the void and the material elements is inconceivable, and the powers, qualities, and actions of the material atoms are also eternal, and all these things are eternal and beginningless, then he cannot accept that the material world was ever created. A person who accepts these ideas cannot reduce the material world to a single underlying principle. He must accept the simultaneous existence of many principles. What is time? What is time? That he has no power to say. In this way, their attempt to find a single underlying principle that governs the material world is only the wild babbling of a child. Like you say, I always talk about that, even the modern physicists. It's always the they call it the universal. What's it? They're trying to find a formula that one mathematical formula explains everything in existence.
Universal law?
Huh? Yeah, something like that. They're looking for this one formula. And each physicist dies driving himself crazy trying to find it. Like that. You know, it's just one of the things they must do.
But now, is it natural to look for that thing?
It is, because that one thing is Krishna. But when they're looking at the different factors that are there to find one, they won't find. Because within that you have time, you have the modes, you have the elements, you have, you have all these different things, and they want one. But that one is Krishna. So they're looking within the material, so it's preposterous that they'll find it. They can't. So, that's the main. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.11. What then is the ultimate truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading and beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman. Then Paramatma, the Supersoul, is Brahman. Then Paramatma, the Supersoul, is realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. This is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized as the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudeva, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. Right? So without grievance, they don't have any problems with him, or there's not. They just accept him, his supreme position. Right? So it's not that they're driven. That's why you see yogis aren't technically classified with the jnanis, they're classified with the karmis. Because the karmis technically have no grievance. You know, they just think if we do our work, we'll enjoy. Right? While the jnanis, it's just about this place is miserable, let's get out of here. Right? Footnote 20. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur proposes to accept the Bhagavan feature by following the process of bhakti, employing the false mortal body to attain the supreme truth. then what is truth? The previously mentioned truth, tattva, is said to be that which is known by the authority of the scriptures. This has been mentioned in the first canto as Vedante tat tattva vidas. Knowledge is truth, which is beyond the gunas, vishuddham. It is supreme, from which arises liberation. It is one without a second, ekam. It is devoid in internal and external. That means there's no difference between the inside and out. There, like with us, there's the soul, and then there's the body, or there's the subtle body, there's the gross body. You know, there's always some inside and out. With Krishna, it's the same. There is no inside and out.
He is the body.
He is the body, yes. That's the thing. That means it pervades everywhere. This knowledge is also Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman means the impersonal aspect worshipped by the jnanis. It is called Paramatma, Pratyak Prashantam, worshipped by the yogis. Prashantam means that in which the jiva is extinguished. Bhagavan is the aspect worshipped by the devotees. They say that these three forms are included in Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, who is the most complete form. He is called Purnam, Purnam Brahma Sanatanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.24.32. As Krishnaya Paramatmane, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.36, and as Tatastu Bhagavan Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.27. In the Gita, he calls himself the basis of Brahman, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Bhagavad Gita 14.27. He also describes himself as Paramatma, Bhagavad Gita 10.42. He also says, Vasudevo Bhagavatam. Among the forms of Bhagavan, I am Vasudev. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.26.29. The word Bhaga means Aishwarya, or lordship. This also implies those who are controlled by the Lord, right? Because if he has lordship, there must be those who are controlled. If he has energies, he must be in control of them. Okay. So those controlled by the Lord means the devotees and the Lord's abode. They are eternal. The devotees and the abode of the Lord are both eternal truth. Like the Lord, they are proved by the statements of Scripture. This is explained in the first canto and elsewhere. Faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.27. Residence in a place where I reside is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.25. Anything related to bhakti is said to be eternal truth as well. The intention of this section is as follows. O King, you have spoken of the material world made of maya, proven by the senses, which has transformations which are eternal, sometimes visible and invisible. You must accept the temporary nature of these material things, since they are limited by time and place, according to your own opinion. But since spiritual objects are not limited by time and space, being completely different, they are not part of the material conventional world. You repeatedly talk of the conventional world. Other philosophies say this conventional world is false. This view has also been stated. However, even these persons do not object to the conclusion of the scriptures. Oh, here. Stated in the present verse. Even the outcast, Vidura Vigata, who chants the name of the Lord once, immediately Adhuna gives up his body. Though his body is still visible, he gives up the body related to Prarabdha Karma, though this is not seen. Then the devotee attains Amritattvam, an absence of the symptoms of death, is qualified for his position, Atma Bhavaya. This means that he remains to serve me wherever I am. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.29.34. All the false material objects which exist in this world lose their material qualities by association with bhakti. Mm-hmm. the Lord makes those objects, the highest truth, favorable to the desires of the devotees. What is impossible for the inconceivable power of the Lord? The statement, service to me is beyond the gunas, and my abode is beyond the gunas, are true. Sardarta Darshini 5.12.11. Right, so that means when everything's connected to Krishna, it takes on a transcendental nature. That's the important thing. So even here it says, the outcast, Vidura Vigata, he chants the name of the Lord once, right? And it's not giving a qualification for that once. They give up his body. So that means the Parabdha karma is gone. So now what you're functioning in is that connection with Krishna. So now Krishna is taking care. So that's what Prabhupada talked about is Krishna karma. Right? That's the important aspect. So there's Krishna karma. So that applies to everybody who chants the holy name. Right? So so they're in a different category. Does that make sense?
In Maharaj, to chant the holy name means not automatically pure.
No. That's the point. So, but they've heard from bona fide authority. So we're not talking sahajiyas and others like this. We're talking those who have heard the name from the parampara. Like that. So the Sankirtan is going down the street and the people see that and what are these Hare Krishna? Like that. That's that holy name. But by their conditioning, they will think that they're still functioning within the realm of karma. And so they'll act in that way. But they're actually not. It's just like someone's in the West, they're in the material world. Right? But, you know, you come to Mayapur and you're here, you're not in the material world, you're in the spiritual world. That doesn't mean that they necessarily take advantage and act in spiritual ways. But it doesn't mean that they're not situated in the spiritual world. That's the whole thing that we have to get. You understand? So we work on time and place. We make good and bad. No, only a good chanting will do this. A bad chanting can't. But we're the ones that are burdened by this concept of good and bad. Right? Remember that's what Dr. Treya was pointing out to
King Yadu. King Yadu.
King Yadu. And also I think what's his name? We're also. The Navayogendras are making this point. You see, 11th canto is made over and over again. This aspect of when you have an identity with the material, and then you're going to say, this is good, this is bad. Why? What's good? Good is what's going to, that you think you can control and enjoy. Bad is what you can't. Right? That's all. It's not a matter of anything else. That's the definition. So there has to be good and bad. Otherwise, if there's not good and bad, how is there artha? How is there dharma? Right? How is there moksha? How is there kama? Right? You enjoy because it's good. Right? But what you call good, someone else will say is bad. Is that making sense? You know, so that's the whole point. Okay, so we have a living theater. Yeah. Okay. The stage is now open.
Okay.
Everybody remember you're on stage. Okay. So the synopsis of Vaibhashikas and Shrautrantikas, Buddhisms. Oh, these are two kinds of Buddhism.
Yeah, there's also four different schools which I want to see.
So, four kinds of Buddhists.
Four schools here I want to see of the Buddhists.
Okay.
Which two are you referring by?
Okay. And this, that, these names, the Vaibhashikas and the Shrautrantikas, does that connect with this Hinayan, Mahayan?
Yes, it's coming in the picture.
It'll say, okay. Yeah. So otherwise it says, they're just different names of the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Hmm? Yeah, like saying sahajiyas or saying upasampradaya. Yeah, like now the Buddhist doctrine is refuted. Why now? Why do we have to get into Buddhism? Right, because we're dealing with the six schools.
Yeah.
Because they take shelter of Buddhism when their philosophy doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he says there's nothing to talk about, so they're hoping the conversation will end, he'll go away, then they can go back to thinking however they like. Plus, Buddhism's something that's always been there. But it goes way, way back in time. Back when that story, when the demons, they were following Sukracharya, they were asking, why are we always defeated by the demigods? And then the point was given because they always do austerity, they always perform yajna, and they always study the scriptures. That's then, by getting that grace, then they're able to be so powerful. So then the demons, then taking Shukracharya's instructions very seriously, they started doing these things. So they kind of divided into three groups. One was studying Shastra, one was performing yajnas, the other was doing austerity. And because of that, then they were becoming so powerful that they could now defeat the demigods. So now the demigods didn't know what to do, so then they went to the Lord. Right? You know, through Brahma and asked like this. And so before Vishnu solved their problem, he says, does anybody, you know, want to come to me? You know, you're in the material world, but now come back to Vaikuntha. You know, and at that time that everyone remembered stuff like, oh, but I got to take my kid to the dentist today, and I think I left the gas on, or, you know, stuff like that. Like that. You know, so nobody came forward. Because Vishnu's point was, this the solution to this problem is worse than the disease. So then, from behind him, then came two personalities. One was the Adijina, and the other was the Adibauddha. Right, so the original Jain and the original Buddhist, you know, the like that. So then they came, and then they went down to where they're going. So the Buddhist, you know, Adi Buddha, then he went to where they're doing the yajnas, and because that's what he does is stop yajnas, then he convinced them that they don't need to do this. They have to, you know. And the Adijina, because in Jainism, it's like pure speculation. You know, it's so their philosophy is called Syadvad. Syad means maybe this, maybe that. So they said, why are you doing this? Well, because we'll do this, we'll get these results. Oh, maybe you'll get, maybe you won't. You know, and the scriptures, oh, because the scripture said, but maybe it's right, maybe it's not. So like that, he just bewildered them and they all stopped doing the sacrifice and all that. And so then it solved the demigod's problems. One small problem remained, though, is now you had Buddhism and Jainism as part of the human philosophies, which previous to that you didn't.
Maharaj, when Bhasmasur, you know, he wanted to kill Shivji, so that time, like, the Lord came in the form of Brahman and then said, the boon may work or may not work, so is that he was using this Jain philosophy?
I can. Point is that anything that works, you can use. Why use the higher points? Because if he starts talking Vedanta, then what is it? He's not going to care. He's a demon. So you just talk on the material platform. Right? So then these things work. Okay. Now the Buddhist doctrine is refuted. Buddhism has four offshoot schools of thought. Vaibhashikas, Shautrantikas, Yogacharas, and Madhyamikas. Footnote 21. Srila Valade Vidyabhushan calls them disciples, shishya. But this must be taken in a general sense as far as historical Buddhism goes. The names refer to schools of Buddhism that evolved over time, long after Buddha's demise. Right? So they claim that they're in that line. But how much they're actually following the doctrine. You know, because that happens. Like means nowadays, present day Christians, they will consider they're followers of Jesus. But followers of what? Because they're not following his lifestyle and religion. They might make certain aspects, maybe the philosophy or be a nice guy. But his actual religion they don't follow. They came up with something else. But they'll identify themselves as follower of Christ. Like that. So in the same way, the Buddhists, he actually says that just general way, because they call themselves disciples. But these schools have actually come up after Buddha, you know, after, you know, finished his pastimes.
There is no official parampara.
I'm not really sure how they work. But I'm saying, in any case, even if there is a parampara, what will it get you? Only materialism. You can't get you spiritual. Right? But they're following him, so in that way it's pious. They'll be purified. But the point is, it's like following, you follow the Vedas, you'll be purified, but you won't get bhakti unless you're following in the devotional line. Right? So in the same way then, so they'll get benefit because they're following the Lord, but only that aspect. But unless they actually want to know, then they'll, only then they'll come in contact with bona fide devotees. Right? Yeah. The names refer to schools of Buddhism that evolved over time, long after Buddha's demise. The sutras of Vyas predate many of the schools of philosophy it discusses. Right? So just like there's six schools of Vedic philosophy, these are the six variations you can get in mental speculation based on the Veda. So in Buddhism, you can get four schools of mental speculation based on the teachings of Buddha. Right? So it's just standard stuff. Right? But it's not like there's something else. It discusses according to modern chronology of philosophies. However, the principles of these philosophies existed long before they were codified in the philosophical works presently existing in Banaslan. There are four schools of Buddhism. First two being realist, Vaibhashikas and Shrautrantikas. And the other two being idealists and nihilists, Yogacharas and Madhyamikas. The realists belong to the Hinayana sect of Buddhism, while the idealists belong to the Mahayana. Yeah, and I think guess within them, then they have Terayana and
that also they have.
That'll also be mentioned.
That will not be mentioned.
Okay, because that seems to be within these, because they're in two groups.
Yeah.
The idealists, I mean, what do you call it? The realists and the idealists.
I'm the nihilist. I'm the nihilist. The nihilists are the worst. Because they believe in nothing. And they say that one must exist.
One must?
The existence. Those are the nihilists.
So that's the Yogacharas?
Yeah. No, those are the Madhyamikas.
Because it says here, well, the idealists belong to the Mahayana. Okay, the realists. Okay, realists. So three of the schools, and then you have the nihilists outside.
And they also mentioned that the Hinayana is the most oldest school, orthodox school, and this name was been given by the Mahayans. Mahayana gave this name Hinayana.
Oh, just so that they'd be different.
Yeah, they'd be.
Because you don't need a name if you. That's all there is.
Yeah.
Okay. Among them, the Vaibhashikas hold that all external perceived objects are real. Shrautrantikas hold that the objects can only be inferred by various ideas. So the ideas are real. Right? So they're both realists in that something's real. But then one is the thing itself is real, and the other one is the concept of it is real. Right, so we also see here is that the quantum mechanics, the nuclear physicists, and things like that is what you're seeing here is they're not worried about the table. They're worried about the concepts of the table.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, this table is here. Everyone looks at the table. But everyone will see it in a different reality. So they're worried about that. So then that makes them... what is it?
Shrautrantikas.
That makes them Shrautrantikas.
They wanted to see beyond, you know. That's right.
Yeah. So you have this. It means not that these ideas aren't there, but that's what Prabhupada says, Nirvishe Shunyavad. We're thinking, what do you mean? No one's sitting around talking Vedanta Sutra or the Bhauta Sutra sutras and stuff. No, but they are talking the philosophy. Because when you leave the Vedas, this is basically what you're left with.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So it's not, you know, that from a, in any way we need to follow something that is already existing.
Yeah, yeah, because you have to have it. You have to have a context. There's a technical word for that. Where is that? Means you have an impression. Only based on a previous impression can you work on present. Can you then create new impressions? So you have something that you're seeing and thinking. So then on that you're going to have base your thinking on your previous impressions of that. Then from that, now you can create a new impression or continue the same one. You know, in other words, the same one, it just becomes deeper. If it's a new one, then it adjusts. But you have to have something before. That's why the purpose of in the logic of examples, because it's connected to something you know. And also in preaching, you connect to something they know. But you're trying to connect the transcendental to something they know, not just work in the field of what they know. That's what we're making the difference here. Sometimes the mistake is made in the idea of soft preaching that they actually work in the field that is familiar. At least they think it's familiar. Or at least they think they're working in it. But they're trying to work in that field, but they may forget Vedanta in the process. So that makes sense. The whole point is no, you're working in Vedanta and you're relating it to somebody according to the field that they perceive. You don't work in their field. Who wants to work in the karmic? No karmi wants to work in anybody else's. They're having enough trouble in their own field. So unless they see your field's better than theirs, then they're not going to make any adjustments. But they're even going to take up your field, only the parts that they like that want to add to their own. Right? So this idea is that, oh, you have to do this, it's all good and all nice. It's an impersonalistic school. Because then you're saying it's all one, there's no variety. You know, what happened to individuality and people can have their different thoughts and their feelings and all that. Though we'll say that to break down the authority of the Veda, but then we'll replace it with a Buddhistic philosophy. So that's why these things aren't recommended. Shastra's there. There's no discussion of that. It means you can discuss it, but it says that's where the discussion starts, is on Shastra. Then you go from there and how you're understanding, how you're applying it. Because otherwise, because the Buddhists have left the Vedic scriptures, therefore then they come up with all these strange things. You know, it's just like, objects are real, so then you could say those who are more practical, they'll look at the objects real. That's what's going to make it happen. But then those who are more sentimental or more liberal or like this, then they'll look at it, no, it's the idea that's more important.
Yes.
And the others may or may not be real, they don't care. Okay, just say JSW, just like that. Just a social justice worker, but it's actually not.
Yes. So it would be logical to accept both. The idea is behind any object is there.
Yes.
And an object we can also perceive. It's real.
Yes, yes.
Although it's temporary, but it is real.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
So why can't they do that?
Because they have an ulterior motive. Because to do that then means why would something be real at the same time there's the subtleties behind it? Who's controlling all that? Right? Because we saw before is that they're all wanting to have a singular origin to everything. But at the same time is they're not willing to accept that origin as the Lord, because then you have to follow God's law. And then that's not of interest to them. Does that make sense? So material means someone who is sincere and actually wants to find out the absolute truth. When it's presented, it would make sense. And then they would start to take up the path.
But the idea to accept that the one origin is to simplify things, or why?
I would expect, but I mean, there's themselves as one, so then there must be something else that's one, so they're just comparing everything to themselves. Everything comes from a source, you know, but they want one source that everything's from, right? All the things that you see, they have sources, but what are the sources of those sources? Then they want to take it all the way back to like that. It would have taken all the way back to, what do you call it? Haribal!
Come.
Rolf, right? I don't know what his name is now. He used to come to the classes before. I didn't even know they were here. The classes go on here now.
He's on a shortcut now, yeah.
Promotion.
Yeah, now so much light and everything, but noise hasn't started yet, but notice you move forward already. Yeah, well, they're going to start building the wall. They're not just taking that down just because...
Wall means brick wall?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Tall one?
As tall as I could get it. They somehow or another settled for 7.5 feet. I was trying for 9, but... 7.5 was already stretching their, you know, the limits of acceptability. Yeah.
Maybe we can get them to 8, because it's a magic number and everything.
No, it's already going on. But I'm going to ask after it's done, maybe we can put a grass roof on the top.
Oh, yeah,
that'll
yeah.
get that. Plus, it'll also absorb sound.
Oh, the grass, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You just put it on top.
Okay.
Okay. So the idealists, okay, so you have realists and idealists, and then nihilists. Okay, so two kinds of realists, one kind of idealist, and one kind of nihilist. But ultimately, they all have some degree of nihilistic, but just one is totally nihilistic. Among them, okay, the Vaibhashikas hold that all external perceived objects are real. Shraudrantikas hold that the objects can only be inferred by various ideas, so the ideas are real, whereas the objects may or may not be real. Like you'll say, this is a rock. You know, so it may be a rock or may not be a rock, but the idea that you think this is a rock, that's what then makes it a rock. Right, you know. How you say, you know, like that big monster guy with the tattoos? At that, and he's known as a rock.
Right? Yes. So they are relativists, all of them?
Relativists.
Because they always say this, if you're not in the forest and the tree falls.
Yeah, it'll all be. Because then it goes back to themselves. But these will probably be, details within their philosophy, but yes, they'll all have that same problem. You know, somebody has their problem. You know, how many angels dance on the head of the pin, or does the tree make noise if it falls and no one's there to hear, or, you know, everyone's got some problem.
So, for example, if we don't think it's the table, so it means it's not a table? It's that relative?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess for someone, it's just like, let us say you tell whoever it is that you are having the, you know, influence over that, we're inviting all these guests over, you know, we need a table for dinner, okay? And then they bring this. So what do you say? You'll say, that's not a table. Yeah, no, we're just keeping it to the technical points here. We're not going in the broader range. Does that make sense? So you'll say it's not a table. Does that make sense? So so that idea is real for you. It's concrete. Because technically in our philosophy, then, the Vedic philosophy is that what you perceive, the samskara itself, that's concrete, because that's what you're going to base your life and endeavors on. While the external world that you perceive with the senses, that is actually abstract. Because for you, you get a specific concrete experience from it, but someone else gets a very different concrete. So it itself is abstract in that you could get all these different things from it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Let's say you're real hungry, and there's an apple You know, it's like, okay, let's say someone's a, you know, fruitarian. Oh, they're in ecstasy. Right? And then you have a dog. It's not even edible. You know what I'm saying? So, the world's a stage. Right?
Yeah, now we can see the full picture.
Yeah, we got the full picture. And they also, it's like they've been driving by every day. Oh, that's what's going on. Does that make sense? So for one, it's not food at all. For another, it's okay. You know, better than nothing. And then for the other one, oh, this is, you can't get better than that. Does that make sense? So that's because the apple itself is abstract. And then how you perceive that apple through your impressions, and therefore then the conclusion you come to, that's concrete, because you'll act on that. So therefore, the one person will jump at the apple, the other one will sniff it, walk away, and the other person will pick it up and go, Yeah?
So. So in this way, everything becomes very subjective. It's like...
Yes. That's why we need Shastra. That's why we need the Acharyas. Because if we start with ourselves, it's totally subjective. Right? So now the subjectivity is not a problem if it's based on authority, on Shabda. But if we start with subjectivity, we'll never get to... Did somebody reset the matrix? What does this mean? Didn't he just go back? Yeah. Oh, I mean, so does this take two? Okay, Rolf walks by take two. Oh, maybe he went back, he's staying that side or something, he came. Now that he's figured out what, because I haven't seen him for years. Has he come during the course, 8 years? Or I know he came before.
I've never seen him.
Oh, okay, so they came in those earlier 2 years. Okay. Jai, Hari Bol, Hari Krishna. Come, sit. Yeah, see? Okay, Krishna has a plan why the wall went down at this time. It was supposed to have been 2 days ago.
Oh. Sorry to be late.
Yes, yes, yes. No problem. Just took a few years to figure out where the class was, right? Okay. Yogacharas hold that objects are not real at all. Only thought faculty is real, and external objects are like a dream. Right? So, the others is that, it means the, what do you call it? The Sautrantikas, then they'll accept that the idea is the substance, but it's not that what you see is necessarily not real. It's just that it's not necessarily the important aspect. Right? It can be real or not. That's not really their worry. But they're not saying it's not real. So now the next school, the Yogacharas, they'll say it's not real. Right? Only the concept, the thought, and is real. So you can see it's a progression. Right? Madhyamikas hold that all things, objects, and thoughts are unreal. So for them, it's the next stage where nothing's real.
So we quote them usually when we say...
Because they're the latest school. So probably you'll have most people who are following will be along this kind of more aligned. Yeah, yeah. Now, where, I mean, because you have, I mean, yeah, just because everywhere there's Buddhists, but which ones are where? Which ones that the Tibetans are? Then you have the Sri Lanka, and then you have, like, in Thailand, in that area, you have the Oriental, I mean, in China and in Japan. So who's following what school, that I'm not sure.
What you have in China, Japan, and Korea are the Mahayana. Yeah.
So Mahayana was the?
Agni.
Okay, so they're all that. And do we know who the Hinayana is?
Yeah, the Hinayans are basically those in the Sri Lanka. Because now Hinayana sect is not existing in India.
Okay, but outside India, do we know? Because I've heard sometimes the things, but I wouldn't have had a clue what they're connecting to. But you have the, because the Tibetan Buddhism seems to be in their own kind of category, so what that means, I have no idea. I think they're more tantric. They picked up more, it seems to be what they picked up in Assam, the tantric aspect. That's the strongest in the Tibetans. I guess they went north up there, because before it was all kind of all connected. You didn't have governments in between that didn't like people going this way and that way.
Just basically, the practices, not devotional service or whatever, meditation and things like that.
Right.
They belong to the Mahayana.
The Mahayana.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's some kind of.
So basically, all these in Japan.
The idealists. Okay, so then they're all somehow or another in this. Not as doing as well. So that means the Yogacharas. The realist. Oh, that's not. And then, so this idealist, but it's the realist and the idealist. But it, you get the idea, the idealist also includes the nihilists. But it doesn't. So what are the nihilists in this?
Nihilists are the madhyamikas. Realists are the madhyamikas.
Yes, no, that's there, but I'm saying of the Hinayan and Mahayan, to what yan are they in? Because you have Terayan, Mahayan, Hinayan, Terayan. Mahayan, Hinayan, Terayan. I know you have those three, but that would match, because then one of them's got to be the nihilists.
Maybe they're just subgroup of the main group.
Yeah, that's they're all. Yeah, could be. Who knows? Okay.
Maharaj, is it that because they consider too much the temporalness of the material world that they think in such a way that everything is unreal?
The means if it's not real, then you can't get worried about it. Right? Means that. If they're Buddhists, then they're trying to get rid of the miseries that are there in the world. So if the world doesn't exist, then where are the miseries? Mm-hmm. So because otherwise Buddhism doesn't have any rituals or have anything. These are all included. You know, as time went on, even during the life of Buddha, these things were included. So Buddhism actually no longer existed in its pure form during the time of Buddha. During his time, it had stopped. He was following, but maybe some of the followers around him, but as it spread, it was just taking on all these other things. Mm. So it didn't exist in its pure form.
Because they have the meditation process.
No, there was no. It means they didn't have stupas, they didn't have temples, they didn't have anything. They just had their bowl. They just went around begging. They just walk, stop someplace, beg, sit under a tree, you know, discuss about transcendence, move on to the next place. Mm-hmm. That's all they had. There was nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So all these others, the rituals, this, that, was all introduced by his students. Because his lead students were all big Brahmins. And so naturally then they would be coming from, you know, they'd be Karmakandis, because that's the ones he's trying to convert. Right? The Karmis who are engaged in all this animal sacrifice. So all these big main disciples are going to be big Brahmanas in the Karma school of Karma. So they're going to be very ritualistic. So they're naturally going to introduce, you know, places and temples and rituals and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just their conditioning. But the point is that as long as they stop killing the animals, it's fine. That's the purpose. Like that. So, yeah. No? All of them hold that all existing objects are temporary, right? So whether they don't exist and temporarily that they're not going to exist, or that, or whatever. You know, it gets funny if nothing exists, everything's unreal, but there's temporary unreal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it gets more and more into your head. The first two groups, Vaibhashikas and Shraudrantikas, hold that all objects are divided into two categories. One, physical, further divided into two subcategories, Bhuta and Bhautika. And mental, further divided into two subcategories, Chitta and Chaitya. And these Bhuta and Bhautika will be explained?
It's coming up,
okay. There are five skandhas, constituent elements. Form, rupa, consciousness, vijnana, perception, vedana. Names, samgya, and mental impressions, samskar. The atoms are of four types, earth, water, fire, and air, with natures of hardiness, liquidity, hotness, and mobility. These atoms join together and become earth, water, fire, and air. These elements become bodies, senses, and sense objects. This is the first skanda called rupa skanda, consisting of the elements, bhutas, and its derivatives. Derivatives, bhautika, means what's made from it. Okay, so the bhuta are the elements, and the bhautika are what's made from the elements. So this table is a bhautika.
Yeah, table is a bhautika, but it is made from earth.
Which is a bhuta.
Which is a bhuta.
So okay.
Yeah.
And it includes all external objects. The jnana skanda is the continuous flow of consciousness, giving the sense of I. This is the agent or doer, the enjoyer, and the atma. Vedana skanda is the perception of happiness and suffering. Samgya skanda consists of names such as Devadatta. The samskara skanda consists of mental qualities like attachment, repulsion, and delusion. These last four skandas are chitta, and are chitta and chaitya derivatives. Inner nature is composed of these and is the seat of all actions. All internal objects are included in the last four skandhas. Thus, the unlimited world is made of these two only, internal and external objects. So that's why then they consider some are real, some are not.
Why they don't include the first one?
Internal objects, obviously you're going to have from the last four skandhas, because that is talking about Vedana, Vijnana, Samya, and Samskara. Whereas Rupa Skandha is whatever is external that we see, that the wall.
Yeah, so that's internal and external, but the Chitya and Chaitya are only with the internal.
Yeah, because that is mental, that is what is classified.
And Chaitya means what you think about. Chitta is what you perceive, and Chaitya is what you think about.
Chitta is your intelligence, no? And Chaitya is thought process. That is in the category of mental.
Chitta.
Okay, so the first one is physical.
Yes. And then the four. But what's chaitya?
The derivative. Mm-hmm.
That means what you think about.
What you think about, the thought process. There are multiple thoughts.
Okay. Anything else like ether is not existent.
So for them, whatever is reality is only non-existence.
So that means ether is the ultimate reality. Because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, because it is not amongst the Rupa Skanda. It is not amongst the Bhuta, not one of the Bhuta.
Adhikarana 3. Vaibhashikas and Shraudrantikas, Buddhism refuted. Samudaya Dikaranam, Sutra Reference 2.2.18-27. Adhikarana Prakrita. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakara overthrows three Buddhist philosophies as follows. The first two deal with the Vaibhashika school of thought, and the third deals with the Shraudrantika school. One, ever-changing equilibrium. Mutual causation, avidya, from Sutra 20. The Vaibhashika's doctrine of ever-changing equilibrium proposes that no effect is said to exist only when the cause ceases to exist.
That an effect
is said to exist only when the cause ceases to exist. But so that means that it's like if you take some clay and you make it into a pot, then only you have a pot because there's no clay.
Yes,
transformation. Yeah, it transforms. The only problem is that what happens if there's still some clay left? So it doesn't become a pot till all the clay is made into pots. Then only it's a pot. You know, whatever it makes sense to them.
Yes.
The famous example that they give is about that when the seed sprouts and turns into a tree, then the seed stops to exist. So what is the remaining some of the effect?
I see. But then when the seeds come, there's still a tree. Yeah. Whatever it is, it works. It means everything works in a limited way. So you see, is their philosophy is even more limited. That effect will cease to exist as soon as it becomes the cause of another effect. But they fail to acknowledge that the cause naturally carries itself into the effect. Hence, the cause and effect have an existence in parallel. But is that because the cause is there in there and the effect, they're not recognizing that. So it becomes something different. They're not thinking that deeply. Because if you could keep yourself busy staring at a brick wall for 7 hours a day, day in, day out, you can't be thinking of a lot. Right? Otherwise it would get in the way of your process of becoming nothing, right? So in other words, if you're trying to become nothing, you only need a little bit of philosophy to get it to look good. Because if you look at too much, then it won't be good.
Maharaj.
Okay.
Maharaj.
Okay.
Can you say that they follow a Satkaryavad?
Not exactly. Because for them is that it just it says the cause and effect have an existence in parallel.
That is what we are saying. That cause and
effect. No, but we're saying that they still both exist. They're saying the one doesn't exist. So yeah, it'll have some connection, but it's not enough, you know, to really say. It'd be just like there's a kid going down the road with a tire with a stick and whacking it. Do we have a car? You know, so it's not really enough to.
So it's not asat karyava.
They're not saying. It doesn't seem that they're saying that the one doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, but it's not that they're worried about that the cause is represented in the effect. You can perceive the cause and the effect. It's just that the two are going on simultaneously. That means they're mutually dependent. It means you can only have a cause, you know, as long as there's... The cause ceases to exist when you have an effect. So, therefore, only when the cause ceases to exist can you have an effect. And the effect only comes into play only when the cause ceases. So there's some connection, but they're only talking about the existential aspect of it. They're not talking about the qualities or stuff. Because qualities aren't really important to them, other than, you know, being peaceful and nice. Yeah. Like that.
It seems that one of the main points is the equilibrium, the balance.
Yes, because they're always trying to make a balance. Because then if you get it into balance, then nothing happens. So if you're dealing with the mentality that they perform the Vedic yajnas, which are meant for, you know, gradual upliftment of the living entity, but in the secondary aspect of the ritual, there's a accommodation for animal sacrifice, and so they're only taking that part of it, and so they're performing rituals so they can kill and eat animals, right? So then they're doing proper activity, but with such a bad mentality that the activity that they're doing, and then if you tell them it's wrong, they'll say, no, this is in the Veda. It's authorized by the Veda. So what position is ideal for them to correct themselves? Right? With such a mentality, they can't do anything from the Vedas because they'll misinterpret it. Right? And outside the Vedas, there's nothing recommended to do. So then what's their position? Nothing. They end up with just no activity. It's like the kid's naughty, so he goes sits in the corner. And then after a while, they calm down and all that. When they calm down and that, then now you can engage them in proper activity. So that's why then Shankaracharya came back, preached, and brought the Buddhists into the Vedic, fold in the way that they accept Shastra. But they maintain their Buddhist concept of voidism, but it's called, now seen as impersonalism.
Yeah.
But they're not truly impersonalists.
Mm.
Right? Yes. Because it's not, impersonalist means that it's just not specifically personal, it's generic. but Mayavada is that nothing exists, there's only Brahman, but there's no qualities. So if there's no qualities, existence is a quality. How do they have it? How can it be there? So they'll accept some qualities, but not others, and like this. So it's very confused. But at least it's then based on the Veda, so they'll follow the religion of the Veda. Right? But they haven't come to the proper understanding of what's the correct philosophy. Okay. Then causation from nothingness. Sutras 21 and 22. The Vaibhashika's doctrine of causation arising from nothingness is a flaw, since this would mean that anything manifests from anywhere at any time. Also, that which manifests again turns into nothingness, since everything according to their theory is momentary. Hence, it's illogical to say that effects arise from nothingness and merge into nothingness. Also, posting nothingness as the ultimate substrate of everything directly violates their own doctrine of ever-changing equilibrium.
Yes.
That means that there's always cause and effect, but then where's the nothingness?
Yes.
Because equilibrium has to be is somethingness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the whole point of these. They'll always have their own. Since
it seems that it is really about the importance of the feeling. I feel I have no disturbance.
Yes. So as long as the mind accepts, that's as far as you have to take a philosophy.
Yes.
Right? If there's a particular goal that, like in here, he's saying, just to get rid of the pain of the material world. So you have so many philosophies that they're endeavoring for that. So as long as for a certain living entities under certain modes, it accomplishes that, then you'll say that, yes, it's doing...
It's okay.
They won't go more than that.
Yes.
But if they actually want to solve the problems of life, not just get rid of them, that means if they're not in the... What do you call it? Is it ostrich school of philosophy, where you just bury your head in the sand and everything's good? Right? Yeah, I wonder if the animals, when they're chasing them, they stick their head in the sand if they can't see them either.
So
sometimes it's just... Because there are so many of the animals that if you don't move, they can't see. That's why if you're walking and they get afraid, if you just stop, then they'll look around, and when they feel that you're not there anymore, they'll stop moving again. They actually can't see you. Right? Because they can only see movement. Catch it like that. Oh, really? Oh, that's why they just sit there.
See some digital image, like an image without any, like, we see, you put a picture and then only the digital pixels are there. Their vision is like that. When you move, then they...
Oh, they can see the... Oh, okay. Okay, I guess if you're looking at movement of pixels, it's easier than try if you're trying to look for it. Whole form, right?
Well, So if we take five levels of consciousness, where will they fit with their philosophy?
Well, they would have to be one of these. Well, it's hard to say. They're outside of this Vedic understanding. But they're, you would put them into the pessimistic school, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. that they're trying to get rid of. Now, within that, there's totally pessimistic, the nihilist, and then the other side, the more idealistic. But their idea is just to get rid of existence. So it's kind of the same kind of connection that you would have with Vijnanamoy, but they don't know what the soul is. They take it that the mind is what you're dealing with, and now if you extinguish the mind, then all the problems are solved. But then if nothing exists, then what do you care? If you don't exist, why are you worried about it in the first place? And even if you say that will be the ultimate goal, you know, that there'll be some happiness from that, but you won't exist to experience the happiness, so it doesn't make sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But it could give a feeling.
It can't if you don't exist. How can you have a feeling? Because there must be a relationship to experience the feeling. Right? In other words, during the transformation, that's where feelings are there. If nothing's transforming, what's there? It's just like, you know, in this, the mind can only appreciate movement.
Yes.
Like
yes,
that.
Yes.
If, otherwise, things aren't changing. So therefore, someone who is more absorbed in the mind wants to see more movement.
Yes.
Yes. Right? Hence, couch potatoes don't count as movement, even though they are pushing buttons on the remote. But that's not enough to actually create an experience. Yes.
As we saw before, the Vaisheshikas, like, you know, most of the physicists fall into that category.
Yes.
When we came to this concept of mutual equilibrium, chemists fall into this category.
Chemists. Oh, okay.
Chemists, sorry.
Generally,
after one reaction happens, they don't worry about what the previous cause is. Now, the current product, how it is going to transform. They don't worry about what happens.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you get... Yeah, as we go through, we'll see all the different disciplines.
Maharaj, when you see that pradhan, you know, the three modes, they're completely in equilibrium and therefore there is nothing happening. And only when the Lord glances, then you see that the equilibrium is disturbed and then the creation takes place. So now here when they posit that it's an ever-changing equilibrium, so how can we understand that when change is taking place, equilibrium is also maintained?
That's what doesn't make sense in their philosophy. They're trying to get to nothingness, but at the same time there's ever-changing equilibrium. So it doesn't make sense. See, we should not try to make sense out of these philosophies because they don't make sense. What we should understand is where they've deviated so that we know what to say to bring it to the proper understanding. But to say it doesn't make sense, that's just the way it is. You know, it's just like I remember one kid, you know, you sit down for the meal, he wouldn't start eating until you gave him the full amount of pasta that a grown adult, and we're meaning serious grown adult, could eat. Like that. It means... You know, even on the others, if you gave him one spoon and all that. No, he has to have like a full, you know. In other words, he would be satisfied sitting in the line at the brahmachari kitchen. Like that. Because they come with dabus, and then you just serve, you know, comes in one or two. You know, more means two dabus, less means one dabu. Right? You know dabus? They're those big monster spoons that are about this big.
Okay.
But I don't know what, like 750 or
700 grams.
Yeah, it's like 700 grams. Yeah. There are ones that are bigger, but generally, you know, it's hard to get a hold of them. Otherwise, they'd use the 1 liter ones. But yeah, like that. A small dabu is like a half liter, like that. You know, you can use that for dal, but not rice. No, rice has to be the bigger dabu, like that.
That's for chutney.
Chutney, dal, yeah, like this, you can do. Like that, but not for anything else. So he would have been really happy there. So until there's a full, he'll complain and cry and this and that until he gets a full plate, right? Mm-hmm. And then he'll eat, you know, how much a 3-year-old eats, a little, you know, a few mouthfuls, and then get up and leave. And he'll do that every day. So does that make sense?
No.
So we don't have to make sense out of it. It's just wrong. But that's what you're dealing with.
Nice.
Now they've grown up, now they eat that much, so I guess he just wanted to, you know, establish a precedent that we're eating that much. You know, maybe not now, but...
It may also be possible that we can be tainted with this Buddhist philosophy now.
Yes, yes. Life. Well, that's what it means. Nirvishesh Shunyavad, that's the background. Just that we're unaware of what that means.
Yes.
You know, we'll go, well, we're not dressed like a Buddhist or a Mayavadi, so I don't have any of these tinges. But the point is without the sampradayic Vaishnavism, you can't actually remove these two.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. Like one big Mayavadi. And he is a Mayavadi in, I think, Guruvayur Temple. Yeah, because they're all Mayavadis. But they all worship the deity, do all this and that. And he came in contact with the devotees. And he appreciated the point in all this and would try to do stuff. And then he asked him, he was asked once about his position and about the devotional and all that. And he says, no, I'm a Mayavadi. He says it'll take millions of lifetimes to get rid of. He says, once you go to Mayavadi, how do you get out? He says, you know, now and again there's a little bit here and there, but not enough. You know, as he would practice, if he would chant and all that, then he would speed up. That's the power of the holy name. But on its own, by materialistic transformation, someone gets into one of these, they'll be in there for millions of lifetimes. The Karmi millions of lifetimes, and the Gyani millions of lifetimes, and the Buddhist millions of lifetimes, and like that. Otherwise, how do you keep yourself busy in the material world?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So all these little flavors and all that, yes.
Well, it seems like Buddhists work mostly on the platform of mind, rather than, because it's
yes.
more about, they want to keep
yeah.
their emotions.
That's the thing, is it's more like mind, because it's not so much use of intelligence. The Jnanis, and it's more use of intelligence, and they use less of the mind. Though they speculate. The mind has to be there. You can't not, but it becomes the prominent. Like that. You know, in the karma, then it'll have the other elements in the future, but there's the identity. So these try to give up the identity, and so it's just variations of the same thing. So all we have to know is, what are the elements that we're working with? And then as they come up, then we can deal with them.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a complete... They don't have to be totally Buddhist to deal with Buddhistic ideas.
Yes.
Or they don't have to be clearly, you know, one of the Mahayana or Hinayana. Mm. Like this. It's just that whatever comes up, whatever they speak, that's what you deal with. Like, you know, the example of Srila Prabhupada in the spiritual dialectics. That whatever was philosophy was presented, Prabhupada had an answer.
Yes.
But whether it was consistent in its presentation, that's a whole different thing. Right? Okay. Also, posting nothingness as the ultimate substrate of everything directly violates their own doctrine of ever-changing equilibrium, since nothingness itself would be an undisturbed constant. Right? There'd always just be nothingness. So then how do you get somethingness from nothingness? That means then there's always transformation.
Yes.
Then if there's always transformation, you don't actually have nothingness. Nothing itself would be undisturbed constant. Only if the Buddhists accept that effects manifest from a material cause, then there is a concomitant existence of both the cause and effect. That would rescue them from all perplexities. However, they ignore this rule. Right? So that means whatever manifestations are there have to be coming from the material element. And that's where it's going to be. But now those material elements, that will come from Krishna.
Yes.
But that only solves all the problems. So they have problem up to there. Others then, you see, have more philosophy. They go a step further. They don't get that far. Right? And the theory of Nirodha, 23 to 25. Okay, so this was all Vaibhashikas. So now the Shrautrantikas. The Shrautrantikas' doctrine of Nirodha, absolute extinction, is false, since there is no ultimate eradication of anything, right? Since it's always just changing. Since the substance, vastu, of all things is permanent, although subject to transformation from one state to another. Right? So to answer all these different parts in the philosophy, they actually have different inconsistent answers. Right? You see in these other schools, their answers are a little bit more consistent. Though ultimately they fail. But here, even the points they have are inconsistent. And from that, then they get all the different schools.
Because they don't follow the Veda.
Because they don't follow, so there's nothing to ground it in. Yes.
So do they have like an explanation even of the secondary creation? Do they go that far?
It seems the Vaibhashikas, and that will say that's there. But the Sautrantikas, then it may or may not be there. It's not a worry. Even if it's there, it doesn't matter. You know, just like in Vaisheshika, they worry about the atoms themselves, not about the 24 elements.
Yeah.
Because their thing is everything comes from the atoms anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like not worrying about the pastry because it all, you know, because why that? It all comes from flour. So flour is a real important thing, not the pastry.
Okay.
Like that. Yeah. So not a very satisfying philosophy. It is inconsistent with all the above defective theories that the Buddhists at all endeavor for liberation. Summary of Adhikarna 3, Samsaya. Is the concept of internal and external objects valid or not? Purva Paksha. Yes, it is valid, because it explains how actions the world arise. Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition as follows. Right, so there's going, is there internal, external, or not? Right, so then this is the Sutrakar indicates that Sutras 18 through 25 controvert the Vaibhashika's doctrine of the external objects as reality. Sutra 2.2.18. So here we see we're fighting against the point of its reality, because we'll say it's real, but it's not that it's the table, because it exists. But what makes it a table is the primary creation. It's the Lord's potency. But they'll just look at it, it's a table on its own. So you see, is again, they're leaving the Lord out of this. Sutra, does that make sense? So if we get confused that they're saying no, it's real, and we're saying no, it's not. Because what how they say is real is not the actual real way of seeing it's real.
The Sankhyas and the Vaisheshiks, they consider the potency of the law, although not the law, but they just disregard both the law and the potency.
Yes. No, it's just that they're not worried about that. It's only enough just to make it work. So there's very much the mode of ignorance. So how much philosophy do you need for someone in the mode of ignorance?
Mm-hmm.
Sutta 2.2.18. Samudaya ubhaya hetu kpi tad apraptihi. Samudaya, the aggregate, ubhaya hetu k, having two causes, aphi also, tad aprapti. There is non-exist establishment of that. If everything arose from internal and external objects, still the universe could not arise. Right, because they're coming from themselves, but where do the atoms come from? They're saying the atoms make all this, all the derivatives, but where does that come from? Right. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the Buddhist theory of direct realism, everything arising from the skandhas, since it lacks a conscious entity to produce the different permutation and combinations witnessed in the universe. Right? So again, what was before is that they can't on their own. It has to be from a conscious entity. Right? In his later work, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 2.4.20, Samgya Murti Kliptis Tu Tri Vrit Ku Kuravata, Upadeshat, explains the Vedanta viewpoint that the Lord mixes the names and forms after making the elements such as earth, water, fire, threefold, because that is the direct statement. Hence the three is unsustainable. Here's interesting, you see that Kliptis, that's an example of that Lirti. Anybody saw that in the books before? Yeah, you had Lirti. Now they just have Ri. They drop the long Ri and the Lirti and Lirti. Yeah? Well, here's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sri Govinda Bhashya. Even one accepts this theory of two types of skandhas. Oh, time's up. Start tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaurapinda ki.